Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by Keith Cordero. He's the host of the Philosophy of Sales Podcast, account exec, a big closer himself. Today, we're going to be talking about meditation and the mindful sales rep. Keith, welcome to the show.
Hey, Colin. Thanks. Happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you. This is, you know, we were just kind of chatting pre-call, and I was literally having this conversation or a conversation very similar to this with one of our account execs last night. I've got a slightly different lens, but that was why I was so excited to get you on the show, is because I haven't done much in mindfulness and meditation. And I'm a little bit, you know, ADD sometimes, probably not full, but just I use that as an excuse because I'm always distracted. And I've always found sort of the sitting down, closing my eyes and just like being there, challenging. And so I found like stoicism really spoke to me, but I'll be honest, I didn't really get fully deep into, as deep into the mindfulness as it sounds like you are. So I'm really excited to get you on here, learn from you. And as I mentioned, I'm gonna forward this recording right to our rep as soon as we finish, because I think he'll really appreciate a different perspective.
Excellent. Yeah, it's interesting how those timely situations and conversations seem to pop up around things of this nature. So happy that we know at least one person that'll gather some value from it.
Exactly. We've got at least one listener, and I'm going to force him to listen to it.
So. Yes, and that's all we really need.
Padding the stats. So talk to me, like you spent some time in sales. Talk to me about your time in sales and then your journey into meditation.
Yes. Yeah, so I've been in medical and dental sales for the last 12 or 13 years, specifically in the dental industry and the dental world for about 5 years. Currently, I'm working for a company by the name of Crosstex, and they are a manufacturer of infection prevention products. So my role is pretty unique. It's split up. One aspect of it is cultivating relationships with other sales reps, like distribution and dealer sales reps that are selling our products. And so it's coaching them and helping to train them on how to appropriately present our products to their end users and their clients. And another aspect of my role is, you know, just kind of the grind, cold calling, prospecting, knocking on doors. I think that's always going to be a part of sales. So those are kind of the two dynamics of my role currently.
Cool. Yeah. And so what led you into meditation?
Gosh, you know, I think it was a pretty organic, natural progression when I was probably my earliest memory that the first breadcrumb in this trail is probably I found a copy of the book Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance by Robert Persig. And I found it when I was like a preteen in my grandparents' house, which if you know my grandparents, that's to this day a mystery. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how that book wound up in their bookshelf, but it did. And I cracked it open. I started reading it. And if no one's familiar with the book, I highly suggest it. But kind of in a nutshell, it's a way of looking at Eastern philosophy and religion from a Western perspective, right? So a perspective that's kind of based in technology and advancement and you know, as you mentioned earlier, distractions, right? I think we all are subject to these distractions of modern life, and how Eastern philosophy and Eastern religion and things like Taoism and Buddhism, and kind of the idea of taking a moment and being present in that moment and being mindful of that moment, can help cure some of the ailments of the downside of the advancement of technology and things of that nature. There's pros and cons to it. So that really kind of opened up my eyes to Eastern religion and philosophy, which then led me to Taoism, and then led me to Buddhism, which then, as I got deeper into Buddhism and started going to different like retreats and and Dharma talks and things of that nature opened up my eyes to meditation. So probably in my early 20s, I'm 38 now. So in my early 20s is when I really picked up the meditation bug and really started to implement it into my daily life.
Very cool. And I've always found that, like, as salespeople, we're kind of looking for that edge. And I feel like for myself, maybe in the role of sales, it's very up and down. It very much can be a roller coaster if you let it be. Can you talk to me about how meditation and mindfulness has impacted your sort of career as a sales rep?
Yeah, absolutely. So fortunately or unfortunately, I guess it depends on how you look at it. I don't really know what a life in sales is like without meditation. Because my sales career didn't start until after my meditation practice started. So I do know that meditation has, I think, allowed me to have more of a empathetic and compassionate view for every single person that I communicate with on a daily basis in my normal life or in my professional career. And especially in the last couple of years, this kind of empathetic selling, consultative selling, empathy, compassionate, these are all buzzwords within the sales world. But it's still, that's kind of a pretty new thing. So for me, it's been really awesome to see the business world and the sales world start to utilize these ancient practices of meditation and mindfulness and use those as resources to help us be better, you know, sales professionals. So it's been really interesting to see the opposite of that, as opposed to being in business and in sales and then kind of implementing all of these things like meditation. I was kind of on the other side of things.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I did a bit of reading on on Buddhism. I read the book that Steve Jobs gave everybody when at his funeral was Autobiography of a Yogi. I remember I read that. I've read some, it was a book on Buddha and I can't remember. I've read a ton on the Buddhism stuff didn't really stick to me. I liked it. It was interesting. I got into I met an entrepreneur here in Vancouver who described himself as a student of happiness. So I got into reading like quite a bit of positive psychology, and I found there was elements of sort of Buddhism and Stoicism and, you know, newer sort of principles of psychology sort of woven in, which I found really impactful. And so I was somebody who started as this frightened child in sales. You know, I've been in sales. I started in sales, like B2B sales, when I was 18. And so the emotional journey of ups and downs was pretty tremendous. And battle hardened is not the right word, because it's not about sort of hardening yourself, but it's more about, like, I think about being in control of your own self. And for me, that's been something that's been a journey on my own. You know, I've had a couple instances of had to walk away from $1.5 million in commission because, you know, the company's going out of business. It's like, well, how do you handle that? You know, how do you prepare yourself for, you know, this is probably going to happen again. You know, looking in your pipeline, you know, you're looking at all these deals. You're like, well, you know, I enjoy talking to all of these people, but, you know, 80% of them aren't going to close. Maybe, you know, 70% of them aren't going to close if I'm lucky. So, like, how do you handle with that rejection? And so, yeah, I totally agree with, like, you know, I'm not too particular about you need to do meditation. You need to be a Stoic. You need to be a Buddhist. You need to be, you know, X, Y, Z. If going for a run, it helps you clear your mind, then do it. It's whatever you can stack sort of on top of yourself to make yourself more of a, I don't know, superhuman rep, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's no magic bullet, right? We've heard that from the sales gurus of the world for years. There's other than the ones that try to sell you on, but for the most part, you know, it's agreed. There's no magic bullet. There's no magic bullet in sales. There's no magic bullet in life. You know, for me, and it sounds like for you too, and I think lots of people that I talk to, it's all about, like you said, how do we deal with these struggles and challenges that we face? Because we're all going to face them. There's no way to alleviate suffering and struggling in life and in our careers. So we should just be prepared that it's part of it. And cultivate an appropriate reaction for us to better navigate through those challenges and stuff, and the suffering that presents itself to us, right? Whatever it may be, as long as it's healthy.
That's such an important piece. And it's something that struck me. It was like really early. I think I was in college when I read this, but it was, I want to say it was either Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. I want to say it was Seven Habits, Highly Effective People. And it was a quote from Viktor Frankl. And it talks about in between stimuli and response, there's a gap, and that's your sort of, and in that gap, you can choose how you respond. And I totally butchered the quote. But it was from, I didn't figure out the book until later on, but Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor E. Frankl. Incredible book. Doesn't really, he references some of the, like, you can tell that there are Buddhist and Stoic influences in him, but he was a psychiatrist that was taken into the concentration camps.
Wow.
And it's his perspective, and he's not trying to like glorify it. His objective was to give you like day-to-day life. And this is what it felt like to be in the camp. And then what his insights were, you know, this is like how people mentally dealt with and sort of, you know, processed and sort of stored that information or their experience dictated whether or not they were going to survive. And that's it's a very short way of sort of summarizing and maybe not 100% correct to his sort of methodology that he presents, because he tells the story, which was wow. And then has like the section after the book, which is sort of his theories on psychology and sort of some of the research that came out of that, which I just found super interesting to have that perspective. But I want to bring it back, like, because what you said there is basically we have the opportunity to choose how we respond to certain things. And so how does meditation sort of help us cultivate that mindset?
You know, I think that meditation helps cultivate the mindset of you know, at the very basic of being present and mindful of the moment, both internally and externally. Right. Because I think a lot of times, look, we're humans. We all, you know, emotions are a large part of what make us wonderful and beautiful and can also be a source of suffering for ourselves and for others. Right. And so I think what mindfulness and meditation helps us do is it helps us to highlight that gap, as you call it. And in Buddhism, it's called the middle way. Right. So it's not it's not an excess. And it's not a complete depletion of this or that. It's finding that gap, that middle way. They also talk about it in meditation. When you inhale, there's that gap between the inhale and the exhale. And that's where really the gap that you want to try to cultivate to live in, because that gap is the exact present moment. And so a lot of times for us, you know, we get really anxious about maybe things that we're thinking about need to happen, or we get maybe shameful or filled with regret or depression for things that have happened or have not happened in the past. So we're in this constant state of bouncing back and forth between what will happen or could happen and what has happened. And so these are these distractions that we keep talking about, right? And so we kind of lose sight of just the simple present moment. In Buddhism, there's a quote that basically details what nirvana, right, what transcendence really looks like, because somebody was asking this Buddhist monk, what does transcendence look like? What does nirvana look like? What is it? Is it filled with flowers? Is it this beautiful, blissful heaven? And he just looked at him and said, chop wood and carry water, right? That's what he did every single day. He got up, he chopped wood for a fire, he got water from the well, and that was his life. And that, to him, that was transcendence, which is, it's just being in this present moment. And I think meditation isn't the only way to do it. Like you said, going for a run, people play music, some people draw, you know, some people read a book, whatever it is, we've all been in these states of meditation in our lives. Every single one of us, whether we think we have or not, we're all in these kind of states where we're hyper-focused on the present moment and everything else just seems to kind of wash away. And I think that's like the true essence of what being a human being is about. And I think meditation is one key that can unlock our cultivation of that.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny that the sort of the impact that it can have on your, like the impact that mindset can have on your performance as a salesperson is tremendous. The, you know, the conversation I was having is of course your whole life. This is a sales podcast, so I'll try and tie it back in. But the conversation I was having with our AE yesterday, he's a good sales rep. And he's had a couple of, you know, had a couple of sales calls that he was struggling on. And he was, you know, fair play to him that he was reviewing his own calls and saying, okay, what could I do better? What was I doing worse? And we were able to sort of diagnose a couple of things. But it was the, you know, one of his takes was the, like his mindset, there was something that was causing him to have sort of a negative mindset, or not negative mindset, but just not a super confident mindset. And he was bringing that onto the calls. And you can hear the difference between, you know, his calls from a couple months ago, where like the sun is shining, things are great, he's smiling, he's confident, he's rocking and rolling. And the difference between that, which is sort of like beautiful Wizard of Oz in color, versus like Wizard of Oz going back to black and white, where you lose so much. It's a lot flatter. It's, yeah. And so for him and for myself is like getting, being able to sort of cultivate that, that winning mindset. Even not winning mindset, but more of a stable mindset. So you're not so driven by the ups and downs. It's going to help you get into the right mindset for every call so that you can be the most, you know, you can work every possible opportunity to the best possible outcome.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And sales mindset is, it's everything. It's like in basketball, you know, my son plays basketball. I played basketball in high school and I try to explain to him, it's not about tricks and this or that. Really, it boils down to your mindset. How much do you believe in what you're doing? How much do you believe what you can accomplish? It's the same thing when you're picking up a phone or you're walking into an office or you're sitting down to have a business-minded conversation with somebody. You know, how much do you believe, one, in your product, two, or your product or services, two, in your ability to appropriately present those products and services to a prospect or a client? And three, how much do you, you know, care, right? Like if you're having a down day and you're down on yourself and you're like, it doesn't matter. I'm going to pick up this phone call. Someone's going to hang up on me or tell me no. So what's even the point? Like, so you're already kind of in this defensive mindset before they even pick up the phone, because you already, based off of your previous attempts, know that, or feel like you know that what the outcome already is, and it's negative. So it's kind of the self-fulfilling prophecy. So yeah, mindset is everything. And something like meditation isn't going to take those ups and downs away, right? It doesn't alleviate that stuff. But what it can do is it can allow you to be more aware of when those highs and when those lows are presenting themselves to you internally, and that you're projecting those out externally. So you can kind of be aware of taking a moment. I always, whenever I do little blocks of like prospecting. So like I'll just a 2-hour block of, I'm just like banging the phone out, shut everything off. But the first, you know, 5 to 10 minutes before I make that call, I sit there with my breath and I just focus on my breath and I get in the moment and I get, you know, I kind of let everything else wash away so that I can be present 100% in that moment, not only for myself, but also for my prospects, right? I need to make sure that I'm really interrupting their day, because that's what I'm doing. We're all interrupting somebody's day. So I'm interrupting their day, and I need to make sure that what I'm presenting to them, the value that I have to present them, is worth breaking up their day for, right? And if I don't have a killer positive mindset, then I'm just wasting everybody's time. You know?
100%.
Yeah.
And you got to be able to connect it to, like, I'm going to waste for a reason. I strongly believe that, you know, our product does, you know, X, Y, and Z. It's going to, you know, it's going to save you this outcome. Like if you're preventing people's gums from getting infected, I'm assuming. I don't know anything about dentistry, but let's go with that. You're smiling. Yeah. So I think I'm close, but probably wrong. Like you're saving people from these horrible infections. Right. And that's why you're picking up the phone. I was like, the more dials I make, the more, you know, infections I can help, you know, prevent, right? And not everybody's going to be able to prevent infections, but you need to be able to sort of tie the reason you're calling into the, like, or the tie the outcome that your customer's going to achieve with the reason you're calling. So if you're just sitting there, and this is how, you know, this sort of ties into that mindset piece, is if you are able to almost choose your mindset. Because if you do work on this, you are almost able to sort of say, okay, I'm feeling this way. You let it drain away. I'm going to replace those feelings with sort of, I'm going to remind myself. So I'm going to get into the, I'm going to move myself into this mindset. Now you're thinking, okay, it's not just about the cold call. It's about reducing these infections or helping this VP of sales not get fired and make sure that they're hitting quota.
Absolutely. Nailed it.
So talk to me about how I do this right. These all sound like really great things to be able to do. And I'm realizing I got to credit where credit is due. Being able to select your mindset. I'm stealing that from a podcast. It was episode 54, Mike Fiascone from DocuSign. I was like, I know it was one of the document services. I didn't want to say the wrong one. He's like their director of sales productivity. Anyway, I'm stealing that from him. So if you're interested on like choosing your own mindset, check out episode 54 because it was really good.
But shameless plug.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Totally unplanned. I was like, oh, I'm remembering this. So talk to me, Keith, about how do I do this right? Right. You know, there's many different ways of meditation. There's many different ways of clearing your mind. Tell me about some like sort of simple ways of that we can sort of get into it. And then we'll maybe talk about some more advanced tactics.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, the simplest way for somebody to start it off would be what in Pali or Sanskrit is called Anapanasati, which is just their way of saying mindfulness of breathing. And really the idea is to suspend all judgment thinking, right? To just focus on the breath, to allow any thoughts that may arise, ideas, things of that nature to just kind of breeze by. Because the big thing in Buddhism is suffering is caused by our attachment to things, our attachment to ideas and to thoughts and to people and to things and both good and bad. There's really no difference between the two. And so meditation is a way to cultivate and practice the release of those attachments by focusing on things like the breath. So the easiest way to start would just be carve out 5 or 10 minutes. Hell, carve out 1 minute of your day, right? If anybody has like an Apple Watch or something like that, they have a really awesome app that's literally called Breathe. And you can just set it to remind you once a day, literally for 1 minute, to just breathe. And it's got like, it's really, on the Apple Watch, it's nice because when you do the inhale, it has like some vibrations that'll kind of vibrate on your wrist. So you don't even have to look at it. You can just sit there with your eyes closed and breathe in when it's vibrating and then breathe out. And it does it for a minute. And so, you know, in this day and age, I think something like that, like an app, is really cool to have because it's just like, oh, hell, I'll just do 1 minute a day. And then once you start cultivating that habit, you'll start seeing results. It was funny. I found this article today when I woke up. That was, again, one of these coincidences that happened to pop up today. And I've got it in front of me. And it was published on Inc. And it's called Neuroscience Reveals 50-Year-Olds Can Have the Brains of 25-Year-Olds If They Do This One Thing. So, well, this one thing happens to be meditation. So there was this neuroscientist, Sarah Lazar from Harvard Medical School, and she did these studies on meditation, and she took folks that were lifelong meditators. So they've been meditating for 15, 20 years plus. And then she had a control group, and she showed I'm looking back at this article, that on a neurological way, the long-term meditators showed that those with a strong background actually increase the gray matter in several areas of the brain that are connected to things like decision-making, working memory, things of that nature. So, I mean, these are things that it's not just kind of a new age, let's burn some incense and put on a tie-dye and like, man, meditation will solve everything. I mean, scientists, neurologists, there's been tons of studies that have shown how useful just carving out 10, 15, 20 minutes of your day and just sitting and just breathing can really be for you.
That's huge. I just finished taking this. I do a lot of walking, running, cycling, and I try and listen to audiobooks on my ride. And I just finished listening to a great course. It's called The Learning Brain. And they actually referenced that study and had talked about, because they were talking about can your working memory, because typically as we age, working memory is one of the things that that goes.
Right.
And so they're like, well, they're talking about all the different studies is can can we have an impact on our working memory and sort of delay the signs and delay the symptoms of aging. And that was one of the studies they researched saying, yes, that some research points to the fact that yes, that we can actually have this impact.
That particular study, it actually showed that people that were 50 years old, that their gray matter in their brain, which affects all of this cognitive things, was supposed to have been diminished, but they had just as much that somebody that was 25 had. So, I mean, that's huge. That's like, you know, super human superhero stuff. You know, we like talking about being like having superpowers. I mean, that's pretty big, you know.
For sure. And so we talked about the sort of the intro here was sort of 10 minutes. So 10 minutes a day, even 1 minute a day, just so walk me through, what do I need to do? So just
find a quiet spot. And, you know, obviously turn off your phone and things of that nature so there's no distractions. Maybe put your phone on do not disturb and just set it for, let's say, 5 minutes to start. And what you would do is in Buddhism, it's called flashing or absolute bodhicitta, which is just kind of in any type of meditation, this is how you start. So you just breathe in and you can think to yourself one and then breathe out. And think to yourself two, and just continue doing that for the whole entire time. One in, two out. And what's going to naturally happen is what in Buddhism they call the monkey mind. It's our minds as humans, just the way that they work, is that we're always trying to put these patterns together. And there's just like billions of thoughts and ideas popping up after another. Boom, 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 boom. So that's going to happen when you meditate. You hear a lot of people say, I can't meditate, I can't sit still for that long, or I can't stop thinking. There's this preconceived notion that meditation is like clearing your mind, when it's really not. It's just sitting there and allowing these thoughts to occur. And when something pops up, you'll start thinking about something. Uh-oh, what am I going to do for dinner? And the moment that you think of it, just go back to your one. You don't have to get upset at yourself. You don't have to be like, oh, I'm terrible at meditating. You know, just when it happens, go, oh, okay, breathe in one, breathe out two, and just kind of keep coming back to the breath, And I mean, they call it practice because that's what it is, right? The more that you do it, the more that you're going to see that it's easier to get back to that state and the more benefits that you're going to see when you're not in that state.
Okay. And so basically find a quiet spot. We got to get the office who just, he puts his noise canceling headphones on and just sort of sits there, which is great. And does his sort of breathing. So 10 minutes breathing in, you breathe in, count to one, you breathe out, count to two.
That's it.
And perfect. And if I do this a couple of times, it's going to, I'll be better. I'll be mindful. And, is it more like going to the gym where I got to sort of practice regularly?
Yeah. I mean, that's why they call it a practice. You know, it's a practice and it's something that really the early stages, that's why I say do it for a minute a day, do it for 5 minutes, because the act in the beginning, the act isn't what's important. It's the habit that you're creating that's really important, because it's the more that you do it, it's like a muscle. The more you work it out, the stronger that you're going to be. The more that you work on meditation, the better the effects are going to be in your day-to-day life, right? So then after maybe a week or two, then you can start something that's more intermediate, like walking meditation. And this is a huge thing in Zen Buddhism. Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a Zen Buddhist, talks a lot and actually has this amazing piece about walking meditation. I can send it over. You can maybe link it up in the notes. But really it's kind of the next step. So when you're sitting and you're breathing, you're focusing on the present moment. You're being mindful of the present moment. Well, walking meditation is similar. You're still present in the moment, but now you're uniting the mind and the body. You're uniting the internal and the external. you're focusing on the way that your feet hit the asphalt or the ground, right? And you're focusing on the things that are surrounding you. Now, you don't want to do this with music or anything like this. Your number one focus is on the meditation practice. So you can still breathe in, breathe out. That's how I would suggest starting any meditation, is just taking 5 minutes to breathe in, breathe out, finding that, you know, resetting yourself, setting the table, and then just go for a walk. I used to do this a ton. I don't work in an office anymore. I work remotely. But when I used to work in an office, I would make sure to carve at least 10 or 15 minutes out of my day. And I was like, you know, it was mostly lead generation. So I was just 60, 70 calls a day, just like banging out calls. Most of the time people hanging up on me, right? So I made it a goal to make sure I carved 10 or 15 minutes out of my workday to just go on a walk. And I would do walking meditation. And I mean, just doing that simple thing was, you know, amazing, right? To just coming back and being able to hit the phones again and feeling refreshed. And so walking meditation is probably the next step up.
Gotcha. And so that's, if I can summarize, you're walking around, you start with a breathing exercise, in on the one, out, you count to two. And then you're focusing on the sensation of your feet hitting the ground?
Absolutely. Every sensation. So, you know, and you can start this doing your breathing meditation. So the sensation of your breath going through your nostrils, right? And leaving over your tongue, over your teeth, out of your mouth, and the feeling of air filling your lungs, and, you know, or even feeling a scratch or an itch or something on your neck and wanting to deal with it, but just sitting there and letting those things happen. So it's a continuation of that with walking. Same thing. You're noticing all the different things that may happen. It may be, you know, a fire truck going by, right? A lot of us will just, we'll hear that and then we'll go, oh, I wonder where the fire truck's going. I wonder where it came from. I wonder if they're okay, but it's just let it be. Oh, I heard the noise. In Buddhism, they talk a lot about when you're meditating with walking or however, to visualize it as your thoughts as bubbles, right? So a thought pops up and then just simply gently touching the bubble so it pops, right? So every time a thought or a sensation occurs, noticing it, honoring it, being compassionate of it, and then just allowing it to go and not really focusing too much on one thing or the other.
Super interesting. So you're visualizing your ideas as thoughts as you're walking around, and then you're focusing on just you're almost like bringing your attention internally, and you're focusing on, what am I feeling? What is the, can I feel the wind, you know, on my cheek? Can I, you know, I feel my breath go in, my breath go out. Can I feel my back, on my back bouncing around or whatever it is?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. And then how long would you spend? You said 10, 15?
Yeah, 10, 15 minutes is typically, you know, but I mean, it could be, you could do it for an hour. I mean, you could do it for 30 minutes. There's no real set. That's one thing I think we get caught up in as Westerners, is we, you know, give me all the boxes that I need to check, right? Like, give me the steps that I need to follow so that I can be, as you said, better. And so we kind of get lost in, am I doing it right? Am I not doing it right? That's why it's always easy. Like I said, always just go back to the breath. When in doubt, go back to the breath. That's always a great little anchor of mindfulness in any activity. I do it before I do give presentations. I just sit there and focus on my breath, you know, before a room full of 20, 30 people come in. Mm-hmm. And I think that it benefits myself and hopefully the people that I'm talking to as well.
Cool. And so I want to ask one more style. So we talked a little bit about some more advanced tactics. So talk to me about these, was it Tibetan styles you were mentioning?
Yeah. So, in Tibetan Buddhism, there is a style of meditation that I've used a ton. That's called Tonglen, Tongle meditation, which is just, it means sending and taking. So it's a way to cultivate compassion for yourself as well as for others, maybe compassion for difficult people. I've used this a lot in sales, in business, when I know that I'm going to have a tough conversation, or maybe when I have a tough call with somebody or a tough meeting with somebody, and they're, you know, the people out there, and they're just jerks, right? They're mean to you. They don't care. They don't care about your feelings. They don't care about your product. They don't care about anything. They're having a tough day and they want to take it out on you, right? We've all experienced that. And so I've found Tonglen meditation really useful in those periods. And what it is it's simply sitting down. And like I said, starting with the breath, the in and out, setting the table. And then you visualize breathing in. And in Tibetan Buddhism, they do a lot of visualization. So they'll, a lot of times they'll say to visualize like black smoke or something of that nature. So you're breathing in the other person's suffering, right? Because at the end of the day, we're all suffering. And sometimes we project that suffering as being jerks to people. And so it's a way of visual. Let's say I got off the phone with somebody. They said, screw you. I don't ever want to talk to you again. Click. So you can maybe later that day, sit down, visualize that person in front of you, and visualize when you breathe in on the one that you're breathing in all of their suffering. And it's like this black smoke. And when you exhale and breathe out, you're breathing out compassion and empathy and love and joy to that person, right? And just visualize that over and over and over and over again. And it'll start to cultivate this compassion in yourself and for others. Sometimes people find it easier to start doing it with somebody that they like, you know, like a loved one or your friend, and you kind of visualize breathing in all of their suffering and breathing out kind of this healing compassion and empathy. And then you move to somebody maybe that's neutral, that you really don't care either way. And then moving into somebody that's what would be considered a difficult person.
Cool. And, you know, I got to ask. So this doesn't sound like something that would take a minute or two to do.
Yeah. Tonglen meditation. I mean, it's, you know, probably closer to like 30 minutes. It's more of an advanced form of meditation. It's not something I would suggest someone that hasn't meditated do before, only because I think that'll turn off a lot of people, because you want to make sure that, like I said, you've set the table correctly, and setting the table correctly to even get into visualization meditation is being aware and mindful and present of yourself and your thoughts and things of that nature. So if you sit down and just start thinking about somebody, and it might, you know, it might make you more upset if you don't kind of have that base of breathing mindfulness.
Gotcha. So the intro is essentially starting for a minute, working up to 10 minutes of just count in on the one, or breathe in on the one, breathe out on the two, in on the one, out on the two. Sort of once you've been doing that you've cultivated that sort of behavior, that habit for a couple of weeks, then maybe step up to the walking around.
Yeah.
And then you're walking around and you're sort of, you're visualizing or just experiencing all this, the different sensations. And that probably takes some time to build up to the Tonglen meditation, which is probably like, when we're talking months, years.
Yeah. You know, it's per person. For me personally, I had probably been meditating about 10 years before I got into Tonglen meditation. And maybe it's partly because, I don't know if I was ready for it. And two, this, you know, a time in my life presented itself. So for me, when I actually really started using Tonglen meditation, I was going through a divorce, and it was about 5 or 6 years ago. And I found this book by Pema Chodron, which was called When Things Fall Apart. And not the classic When Things Fall Apart. It was her version. And it was really just her perspective on how to use Buddhism, how to use meditation in really difficult times. And Tonglen was something that she talked about. And it changed my life, man. Like, I'm not just kind of saying that. Like, it really, meditation as a whole just completely changed my perspective of myself and externally of the world and of people. So, yeah, but Tonglen meditation is not something, I don't think you definitely need to work up to it. Couple of months, you know, year or two. You know, try sitting down on a cushion for 30 minutes and just counting your breath. And if you can make it through that a couple of times, then hell, go for it.
Perfect. So I know you haven't been in sales without having gone through, or you were sort of mindful before you were in sales. What do you think that that mindfulness has helped you sort of achieve as a sales rep? What would have been some of the sort of benefits that you could see, or what are some of the times where you've implemented it, or you've used some of the things that you've learned in order to help you get a better outcome that you might not have had you not known anything about mindfulness?
I think just the whole perspective of compassion and empathy, like, you know, we talked before the call a little bit, empathy and compassion and collaboration and things of this nature are like hot buzzwords and hashtags right now in sales and on LinkedIn and things of that nature, which I think is great. But, you know, a lot of times I'm not sure sales reps really co-sign to those things, right? I think a lot of us talk about being compassionate and empathetic of a client or prospect's needs, but are we really? And so for me, I think mindfulness and meditation has helped me truly cultivate compassion for people just genuinely. And so I think that makes me a better type of sales professional that I want to be, which is someone that is compassionate and empathetic to a client's needs. And sometimes that means knowing when to walk away. Sometimes that means knowing when to say, you know what, I don't think we're the right fit for you. And that happens on a daily basis for me, you know, and it's not a tactic. It's not like a trick. It's not like when they say this objection, I'm going to say, I might not be the right fit for you and see what they say. Right. Like, because that forces them to go, well, wait a second, who are you to tell me? You know, it's not a tactic or anything like that. It's just a general, genuine feeling of compassion and wanting of partnership. So I think that mindfulness is definitely, I don't think that I could have a successful career in sales as far as I have without having a basis of mindfulness and meditation, to be honest with you. I think I would just be, I was kind of a jerk when I was younger. Seriously, I was kind of a jerk, and I was kind of selfish, which a lot of us are, as you know, especially when we're younger. And yeah, I mean, it's okay. It's just kind of part of growing up. Although some of us don't ever, but I think for me, mindfulness and meditation really allowed me to cultivate that awareness and that compassion for people, which has done wonders for my sales career.
Phenomenal. Keith, that really appreciate you taking some time to teach us about meditation. I want to do two last things. I want to take it. Let's sort of zoom out. Let's get a little bit back into the sales world. We'll get tactical with the lightning round. So we've got three questions I prepped you on, and I added one more that I think you'll, because you sell to, I know it sounds like you also sell to other salespeople that sell to dentists. Is it primarily to other salespeople, or is it do you sell directly to dentists?
It's pretty much split in half. So a lot of what I do is selling to coaching sales reps on how to sell our products. And then also what I do is sell directly to end users. So I've kind of got a unique role where I'm doing a little bit of both.
Okay. And so you also do plenty of time crushing the phone. So what do you do when people are brushing you off? You're dialing, you're getting the no thanks.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the most important way to get past the no thanks is to make sure that your opening line is something that doesn't lead to a no thanks. So one thing that I have been doing recently that works for me in my particular industry, which is infection prevention products, is when I'm calling an office, I'll ask, you know, hey, Mary, I've got a really quick question for you. If you had to give you and your office a letter grade today on your infection prevention process, what would it be? Right. And that usually opens up a conversation because, you know, whatever it is, ABC, whatever it is, it leads to a conversation. Mostly people never give A. they're like, oh, C or B, we could do better. And then that kind of opens up the conversation on what I do and if what I do makes sense to fit with what they do. I did have somebody say they give themselves an A once, and I was like, uh-oh, wasn't expecting expecting this and that. And I said, oh man, that's awesome. Like, you know, give me a high five over the phone. I said, well, before I let you go, can I ask you what your process looks like? Because I have tons of clients that give themselves C's and D's, and I would love to give them some tips on how that they can better their infection prevention process. And then from that, we kind of discovered they were more maybe of a B or not. So I think the most important thing is, yeah, exactly. So I think the most part is be enthusiastic, right? Jed Blunt has talked a lot about almost kind of ignoring it, like apologizing and then kind of ignoring, saying, oh, no, thanks. Like, oh, I know, I'm sorry, this isn't a bad time. How about I call you tomorrow? You know, like kind of just brushing it off. Because a lot of times I think it's just this automatic thing. If someone says no thanks to me before I've even really presented my value, then for me, that means I did something wrong in how I'm presenting myself. The first sentence out of my mouth just screams salesperson. Mm-hmm. And so I fail, right? So it's back to the drawing board on the next call. How can I make it better so that no thanks isn't even part of the vernacular of the conversation?
So you open, hey, this is Keith Cordero. I'm looking for so-and-so.
Yeah, I'll say, well, honestly, I'll do a little bit of research beforehand to see if I can get the name of the office manager, which is usually the ones that make decisions. Hey, Mary, is Sarah there? And you know, well, who's calling? This is Keith Cordero with Crosstex. Oh, okay. Usually they just pass it right along. And then once she gets in, say, I don't even get into the introduction of who I am usually. It's, hey, you know, this is Keith Cordero with Crosstex. I've got a really quick question for you. And then I go into that. So it's kind of disruptive in a sense. It's like, wait a second, you know, who the hell are you asking me a question? But it's such a simple question and everyone wants to answer it. I've not one time ran into somebody yet who didn't answer the question. They just said, I don't have time for this. They'll at least say, you know, they'll say a letter grade because they want to grade themselves. They want a cookie, you know? So
yeah. And it's an easy question to answer. It's ABC. I know all three answers.
Yeah, we all know a grade, you know, and we all kind of we have an idea. If I'm an office manager, I have a pretty good idea of what the grade of my infection prevention process is in the office, right? So,
very interesting.
Kind of a no-brainer.
Okay, and so what about how do you get people to respond to your emails?
Man, I think in this day and age, it's important to utilize every single piece of communication software and avenues that are possible. If you're just picking up a phone and you're just leaving messages, you're not doing enough. If you're just cranking out emails, you're not doing enough. If you're just posting on LinkedIn, you're not doing enough. You really have to, because we, as buyers, we all are stimulated by different things in different ways. And different products and services stimulate us on different platforms. If you're just calling everybody, then you may be calling 20 people that would respond to you like that if you just texted them, or vice versa. If you're just so for me, I number one, I try to attack all avenues. And then once I kind of start building a relationship, I make notes of myself either in a CRM or something, or on my phone or something of that nature that says this person responds better to text. Right. So I know when I'm reaching out to that person, step one, I need to text them. The other big thing that I try to do with every kind of interaction is I try to leave some sort of value with every interaction. I hate the just checking up. I hate the I was just in the neighborhood kind of stuff. I don't want to be that. I've been that. I probably will be that at some point again. I know that it's easy to fall into that. But I just try with every single interaction am I adding value to this conversation? Is this pushing the sales process forward, not only for me, but for them? Or am I just kind of, you know, trying to dig up old stuff that's been buried? So those are my two big things, you know, utilize every single piece of communication avenue that there is and make sure that you're providing value each interaction.
Cool. And I'm going to swap in my last question with, what's the best way to book a meeting with a dentist? Are you cold calling? Are you emailing them? Do you just walk in or an office manager at a dental office?
Yeah. You know what? Honestly, I mean, it's picking up right now. So I've LinkedIn is kind of picking up a little bit more social. I think they're behind everybody else. They're not, you know, in the software tech industry. So the B2B, although it kind of is B2B, but they're not really in that world quite yet. But mm-hmm. there are some younger doctors that are getting out of school that are on LinkedIn a ton. They're on Instagram a lot. So I've connected a lot with doctors on Instagram and LinkedIn of you know, posting blogs and things of that nature and adding value that way. And then saying, oh, he liked that, and kind of reaching out on a DM, hey, you know, blah, 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 blah. But mostly, honestly, right now, it's just phone calls and cold calling and knocking on doors. That's the best way to book meetings in my industry right now, just the old school way of doing it.
That's fair. My dentist is on Strava, so I can see him there and like chat to him that way.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So, cool.
I'm not an Instagrammer, but yeah, I'll definitely follow you on Strava.
Nice.
Perfect. So Keith, really appreciate you coming on. I want to give you a chance to promote one thing. And we had kind of talked about your podcast. So we're going to do a little cold call role play. Let's put these, put your chops into action. So who am I, a potential listener of the show?
Excellent. Well, so the Philosophy of Sales podcast started as a blog about a year ago, a year and a half ago.
We're actually going to, I'm going to ring and you're going to give me.
We're really doing role playing.
We're actually doing a cold call role play.
Okay, cool.
You don't actually have to call me. I'll just pick up my phone. We'll pretend.
Okay, so you want me to say ring, ring?
Yeah, I usually say ring, ring. That's my line.
Is that your thing? Okay, I don't want to take it from you, man.
Dare you? How dare you? And then you got to call and convince me to give you some time and then subscribe to your podcast and give you 5 stars on iTunes, because that's what we all want.
Okay.
All right. Ready? Ring, ring. Hi, this is Colin.
Hey, Colin, this is Keith Cordero with the Philosophy of Sales. How are you?
Good.
Good.
I'm just about to walk into a meeting. What do you want?
Are you? Okay, let me just give you 1 minute, or you give me 1 minute. How's that?
Sounds good.
So I talked to James Bowden, and he says that you are a host of a podcast, so I can assume that you also enjoy listening to podcasts.
True.
Yeah. Well, I am the host of a podcast. It's called The Philosophy of Sales. And what we do is we focus on using discovery, collaboration, and compassion in all sales transactions, regardless of size or scope. Is that something that you would be interested in listening to if I sent one over to you?
It sounds interesting, but I don't think I quite understand what you're like, why I would listen.
Why would you listen? Well, what are some of your favorite podcasts?
I like the Mixergy podcast. I like the Joe Rogan podcast lately, and Sam Harris Waking Up.
Excellent. And about Joe Rogan, he's all over the place. He talks about, you know, philosophy,
he's crazy. And I still kind of don't like him, but he's got the best guests.
Yeah. It's kind of watching a car wreck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a car wreck of a podcast. Well, ours isn't quite that bad of a wreck, but what we do is we do have conversations about philosophy, business, and everything in between. We kind of connect the business side world with more of a philosophical thinking man, thinking woman's kind of ideas that can be implemented into sales and how can make you as a sales professional even better. Is that something you would be interested in hearing more about?
Sounds super interesting. Where can I find you?
All right, I'll send it over.
So you're on, people can check you out on iTunes, YouTube, all those channels?
Yeah, we're on iTunes, Spotify, all that good stuff. Yeah, Philosophy of Sales. And you can also go to the website, which is thephilosophyofsales.com, which is the blog, and it has links for the podcast as well.
Right on, Keith. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Go to thephilosophyofsales.com and there's a spot where you can shoot me an email, or you can find me on LinkedIn, Keith Cordero.
Perfect. Keith, thanks so much for coming on the show. I'm going to go take a few minutes and do some meditating before I move on to my next meeting.
Excellent. Sounds perfect. Thanks, Colin.
Right on. Thanks, Keith. Remember, everybody, breathe.
Breathe.